I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. Time is running out on efforts to craft a new global treaty to address climate change. That's the warning from many world leaders and climate activists. The clock is ticking toward a December deadline for agreeing on a treaty to replace a 12-year-old Kyoto Protocol. Serious rifts remain between developed countries and the developing world, and Europe and the United States aren't on the same page either. The head of the United Nations has called a special meeting of global leaders next week to instill a sense of urgency, and many key players are in Washington this week to try and rally support for action. Among them is Britain's Secretary of Energy and Climate Change, Ed Miliband. He says the U.S. has to act soon on climate change.
I think we do need the U.S. to move as quickly as possible and get its legislation through. We have a deadline that's been set by the world of December this year at Copenhagen in Denmark to reach a new agreement on climate change. It's very urgent that we do it, and obviously we need the U.S. on board.
But there is great concern that the U.S. could come into Copenhagen in December and essentially scrap all of Kyoto and try something completely different. Are you concerned about that?
I think, in a sense, the question of legal forms is less important to me. What really matters to me is, do we have significant cuts in emissions from developed countries, that includes Europe and the United States, and do we have significant action on carbon emissions from developing countries? Because the truth is, you know, that we're in this together and we can't solve the problem unless we get developed countries and developing countries to act. And that's what I'm talking about here in Washington this week and indeed in New York next week at the UN Secretary General's special meeting on climate change.
How are you going to pay for this new treaty? I mean, there's been a consensus in Europe for a common fund, but in the U.S. there's probably little chance of people paying taxes to a foreign entity.
Yep, that's another difficult issue for us. We have put forward proposals, the UK government, for how we can raise about $100 billion a year of public and private finance by 2020. It is one of the important responsibilities of developed countries. We have caused the problem. We've got countries like India, for example, that have 400 million people living on less than a dollar a day. We need to help them both to adapt to climate change, but more importantly, as far as a country like India is concerned, also to go down the low-carbon path, not the path that we took, which was high-carbon, but to grow in a low-carbon way so they can continue to take their people out of poverty, but they don't increase their carbon emissions at the same time.
Well, fair enough. I mean, it's good to be hopeful, but why persist with the idea that the U.S. will sign up for any revenue-generating scheme when there's very little chance that that'll happen?
Maybe I'm an optimist by nature. look, I think that it's in the U.S.'s self-interest to sign up to a scheme both that reduces its own emissions and that helps other countries, because the truth is there's no solution to this problem without developing countries being on board. I think the U.S. recognizes that. So I guess I'm more optimistic than you that as part of an overall agreement which gets global warming under control internationally, the U.S. will also sign up to the financial part of this.
A lot of people are saying, Mr. Miliband, that this is Copenhagen is the last chance to save the planet from a temperature rise of 3.5 Fahrenheit, the kind of danger benchmark that could bring calamity. But a lot of big players like China and India are making big strides toward renewables. I'm wondering how important it really is that we get a strong treaty this time around.
I think it's pretty make or break, to be honest. I think if the world ducks this this opportunity or fails to meet this opportunity, I don't think you can guarantee this will just come along again next year or the year after. So that's why in Europe there is huge pressure, rightly, on politicians to make December at Copenhagen count. And that's the message I've been taking to the discussions here this week.
And next week, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is aiming to sit down with all the heads of state and government and regenerate a sense of urgency and commitment in the lead-up to Copenhagen. Will that be enough to get everyone on the same page?
I don't think it'll be enough on its own, but I think it's an important contribution. Obviously, the convening power of the UN Secretary General is important. I think the point about this is, how do we overcome these obstacles? The answer has to be imagination. If we leave this like a conventional negotiation, like the trade talks, for example, till 3 o'clock in the morning on the last evening, we won't get an agreement. That's why Britain took the lead in saying we've got to provide some finance for developing countries. That's why I'm pleased that developing countries like India India are now saying, look, we will quantify the action we'll take on emissions. That's a recent announcement that they've made. I think everyone needs to understand each other's constraints, but also see that we've got to contribute to solving the problem. The UN Secretary General will be an important factor in this, but really it's up to us. It's up to the governments of the world to say, we understand that this is something where if we don't act, future generations will look us in the eye and say, you knew the scale of the problem, but you failed the test.
I'm interested about your title as Secretary for Energy and Climate Change, which was a job created in 2008. It kind of hints at a new mindset, but also a possible conflict of interest. It must be tough to balance lobbying from energy giants like BP and National Grid with environmental activists.
You're right that there are tensions in this. It's interesting over a particular issue like coal, where I've put forward some proposals on how we regulate new coal-fired power stations in a pretty strong way to encourage carbon capture and storage. I think there's more consensus possible than people might imagine in this, though, because the truth is, and this is something that we do have to make industry realize, is that we're moving towards low carbon. There's no other way to go, and it's the question whether it happens sooner or later. And in my view, it needs to happen sooner, and those countries that actually wake up and smell the coffee will benefit as a result.
Well, we certainly see the BP propaganda in the pages of glossy magazines here in the States, but it's still got to be difficult with coal lobby and BP breathing down your neck. How committed are you personally to your portfolio?
Look, I'm very committed to this. I do think this is the biggest challenge the world faces. And I think it emphasizes something very important, which is that we can't think about any policy now in isolation from the issue of climate change, whether it's your energy policy, whether it's your transport policy or your economic policy. And I think that the stride that I guess in the UK we've still got to fully make, and all countries still have to fully make, is to integrate climate policy with everything we do.
Ed Miliband, the British Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change. Mr. Miliband, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.